You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 129, The Little Prince. Yeah, he just said the B word.
Hello, hello. Welcome, animation fans from around the world. My name is Mason, and you are on the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers. This is episode 129, and today we are reviewing The Little Prince, out on Netflix now, so go watch it. And what can I say, really? We are the ultimate animation podcast. We are the greatest that ever lived. We are the toughest in the universe. We're like three Super Saiyans just powering up on what we love about animation. But in all seriousness, if you are a recurring listener, welcome back. If you are a new listener, then welcome. And the Animation Addicts Podcast, it's like, think of us as like your three nerdy animation loving friends, and we're all like sitting on the couch like talking about animation. That is the podcast, and that is what we do. We talk about what we love about animation. We usually review one film per episode. Today's The Little Prince, and we're pretty excited. This is kind of a different one.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely, it has a different backstory and history to it.
It does.
Are very excited for us to do this film, so I'm very excited that it finally got released in the United States, so we have a legal way to watch it, which we all watched legally on Netflix.
I mean, we always do, right?
We always do.
I mean, why even mention the illegal part? Because we're so clean cut. We don't incriminate us more. I'm not guilty. Do I look guilty?
I'm just saying, if you wanted to have seen it, you could have. But I waited, and now I see it in its glorious HD instead of some crappy stream that is available
glorious
somewhere else.
HD and Technicolor. So, spoiler alert, folks, we're going to be going over the whole movie. We are the Rotoscopers. We trace over everything that we love about these films and everything that we want to talk about. And so strap yourselves in if you've seen the movie. If you haven't, then be ye warned. There are spoilers from now on.
Complete spoilers.
I just want to make a quick announcement, a really, really important one.
Oh, please do.
On Thursday, I'm getting a haircut.
Big moment
for
Mason.
This is a big deal.
I am, dude. Someone actually yelled at me from their car yesterday because of my hair.
What?
So I'm starting to get... It's College Station, Texas.
Positive or negative yell?
Oh, negative.
What did they say?
I've been heckled. I had one of those awkward, should I cross, should I not, with some person in the car, and I guess they got frustrated with me, and they were like, they rolled down their windows, they were like, cut your effing hair so you could see better.
Oh.
The punchline is, the guy was balding.
Jealous, that's
so
what it is.
I wanted to kind of, you got caught jealousy. Up with us at a stop sign in front of the Target that I was walking out of, so I wanted to kind of walk over to him and be like, hey, just because you're jealous doesn't even mean you have to be a jerk about it, but... I wouldn't be able to sue him for that much anyway if he assaulted me. So, well, we go on a lot of tangents too if you're a new listener. But yeah, haircut incoming. Also, I finished my summer course, my animation course that was mentored by DreamWorks, and very successful. We did a really good job, and hopefully this brings me that much closer to the coveted job at DreamWorks Animation. So,
these are exciting times for Mason.
Yeah, they are. Well, you're fixing to go to Rio.
I am,
and all kinds of good things are happening in Morgan's life. So, you know, we're just flowing with positivity.
It's true.
Turn around, I'm right behind you. Turn around, I'll turn around too. Turn around, so we can clap hands. Turn around, it's light and flutter. Turn around.
Speaking of positivity, I was not positive that this was, I don't know, I thought that, I guess I had misconceptions about The Little Prince, because I thought, it was in production for a while, or did they just not get it out for a while?
Both. It was obviously a long time in production, but at the same time, I mean, I feel like we had been talking about this movie for a really long time, and it just took a long time to actually get distributors, and then the U.S. date got pushed and pushed back and changed and this, and then finally canceled. And so I just feel like it's just been in the pipe a really long time. So.
Just in the pipe. Well, when you're trying to figure out which studios are doing these films, it's like, I don't know. Those foreign films always have like a million studios attached to them. So I didn't really bother to put down which studio created this film.
Well,
Netflix did not produce it. Netflix is only distributing it.
According to Wikipedia, Kaibu Productions, LPPTV, M6 Films, On Animation Studios, Onyx Films, Orange Studio, and 210 Cartoon were the production companies. It says distributed by Paramount Pictures, but that might need to be crossed out and changed for Netflix. They are producing. Because did you notice as you're watching on Netflix, it said a Netflix original film, which I thought was very interesting, because typically when I think of Netflix original films, it's usually the concept is from Netflix and they're the ones that are kind of pushing.
That produced it.
Yeah, but that isn't necessarily their definition of a Netflix original film. Mostly it's the first and only place you can find this is on Netflix. And that definitely is true in the United States because it never quite made it here, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
You know what? Kind of ruined that Netflix original movie is the phrase Disney Channel original movie. It throws me off. I expect something like that with this.
Absolutely,
Zetus Lapidus. But this just in: Chelsea got her video working,
yay!
And so we get to see her beautiful face.
If I start skipping, I will turn it off. But yes,
way to take one for the team. But hopefully it doesn't come to that.
Hopefully not.
So director of this was Mark Osborne, who directed Kung Fu Panda. So big shoes to fill there. I was looking on his IMDb resume, I guess. I guess he did several live action sequences for SpongeBob, which if you watch the show, those are important. They're few and far between, but they're always hilarious. And he actually did 3 episodes of Action League Now from Nickelodeon's hit show Kablam, which I used to watch when I got home after school on weekdays.
Very nice.
So, hey, Action League Now, do you remember it?
No.
The Flesh, he's super strong and super naked. Thunder Girl, she flies like thunder. Stinky Diver, a former Navy commando with an attitude as bad as his odor. And Melt Man, with the power to melt. That was the intro for Action League Now. Come on, someone in the chat has got to remember that. Anyway, this episode isn't about Action League Now. Release date? Was that I'm putting the Cannes Film Festival release date, which was 22nd of May. I put down 21:15, so 19,000 years from now, there will be a movie called.
Good time.
Sorry, we don't get out much. 2015, so at the Cannes Film Festival. This is kind of interesting. So, budget was $77.5 million worldwide. It's grossed worldwide $97 million. 500,000 and change. And 98.6% of its grosses are foreign. So apparently the French are cheap.
Meaning foreign as in everywhere but France?
Everywhere but France, yeah. Not the U.S. version of foreign,
gotcha.
Which is everywhere but Texas. But we're talking about foreign to France.
That is interesting. Yeah, and I mean, it definitely has made back its budget based on those box office, but imagine what it potentially could have been if it was released in the U.S. I feel the U.S. is one of the largest markets.
China's where it's
at. It was definitely positioned. It was supposed to be released around March or April of 2016. Just cut last minute, almost a week before is finally when the announcement came out. And I remember.
Yeah, but what came out in March?
Well, that's
April,
what I'm like, saying is that if it would have come out, I feel that it could have done relatively well. I mean, there was Zootopia that came out, and Zootopia has gone on to make over $1 billion in the box office. So I'm not saying that it would have beaten Zootopia by any means, but I think it could have found an audience and definitely made some additional sum. I mean, we don't know how much Netflix paid for the rights, obviously, to have exclusive streaming rights.
Yeah, how does that work?
They buy the rights, and obviously that's kind of how they pay the filmmakers. But then again, there's like pros and cons of being on Netflix, because, you know, yay, it was so great that Netflix came and saved this movie from, you know, not having a distributor. It seemed like it was really in limbo for a while of, are we ever going to see this? What's Paramount doing? So the pros and cons with Netflix is great. It's on Netflix. Most everyone can watch it because a lot of people do have Netflix subscriptions. But then I feel it really taints or hurts sales of the home media, which I mean, I have no need of owning this film. if it's going to be on Netflix. Not saying that it's going to be on Netflix indefinitely, although it may be because now it is titled a Netflix original.
Because it's got the Netflix
right?
brand.
Right? So
yeah.
Sometimes there's every month, you know, you can go and read websites and they list, you know, what's coming to Netflix this month and what's leaving. And so you can catch up on those movies before they leave or, you know. But
well,
this should be here for a while.
Without a theatrical release, it would be really hard to sell DVDs, especially in a time when
how many direct-to-video films have sold millions of copies without a theatrical release?
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Norm of the North.
Yes.
Norm of the North had a theatrical release.
Oh, it did?
Yes.
But that was always pegged as Disney,
though. Why did I
miss
it?
And generally followed a known property. While The Little Prince is known in...
It's one of the most popular works of fiction in the world.
It is.
Very well
but
known.
As far as like around kids, though. Kids who haven't read it.
But kids don't.
What about Tinkerbell? What about those films?
I don't know. I still feel like it would have done fine. I feel like the cover and just the way it merchandise, I mean, it would have intrigued people to buy. Obviously, it's not going to be as same, you know, sales.
Yeah.
But anyways, we are going off on a tangent.
I don't know, man. All I know is that it's done. I mean, it's made over its budget. A lot of it's foreign. And then I just don't know how what kind of revenue stream you can get from.
It's definitely less, right? If this would have been properly released and properly, well, who am I to say what is proper? If this would have been released in theaters, not only would have its revenues been significantly higher, right? Because now there actually are revenues, but home media sales likewise would have doubled or, you know, added to that. Now it's just grateful to have a home, I think.
Oh, yeah. It has a home. It has a Flicks home. Yeah, so like Chelsea or Morgan or both of y'all were saying, so this is based off a children's book that I never even knew existed.
Sad face.
I was raised off of straight up Calvin and Hobbes and Garfield, I tell you what. And Hank the Cowdog. He was a huge hit in South Texas. And not much else. But I never knew the book existed. It is kind of weird because I feel like they're either making these children's storybooks into animated films or live action films. I feel like we're definitely in that era still.
Yes, I did know that this existed. I'd grown up reading it. Haven't read it in a while, but it is very popular. It was published in 1943 in French, and it is one of the... I was reading on the Wikipedia page for The Little Prince. It's one of the foremost translated books in the world. So it's been translated time and time again. It's incredibly... popular. It's a novella in the fact that it's more of a short story. It's not necessarily a full-on novel. It's about 90-ish pages, I think. And to me, it really does fall. I mean, they did a very good job in kind of telling the story of the Little Prince or adapting it. But it really is just sort of these fables. You know, it feels very much like here's these little vignettes where you're going to be learning something, or there's a big philosophical discussion or topic that they're talking about. Some of these little epithets are a bit disconnected. Here's a scene, here's a scene. They have a similar vein, you know, that ultimately ties it at the end. But and I feel that was expressed very well in the actual adaptation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was actually, it's one of my... it wasn't a book that I grew up reading. I didn't actually really hear about it until like 6 years ago or so. And I, the first time I read it, I actually did the audio version, and I would go to the gym and I'd be, you know, listen to my Little Prince. And I would just, there'd be these moments where I'd be like lost in this trans, like, thought, just like, oh my gosh, this is the most, I just so entranced by so wow. many of the stories. I was just running, and all these little quotes that would pop out, and I'm like, wow, this is really transformative for me. I really like it. So, and honestly, it's one of my favorite works of fiction out there. And I hadn't seen any of the other adaptations. There have been, I have looked it up just to see if there are, and there are quite a few other adaptations. They don't look nearly as good. Like, I don't want to, like, none of them look like something that I would want to see. This one, from the very beginning of everything that I ever saw about this one, just had me. And I was like, I want to see this movie based on the images that were portrayed in the everything that we saw.
Now, one thing that surprised me was this inclusion of this new storyline, which is shown through CGI characters. Now, I feel like for the most part, when this was initially, the teaser trailers were coming out, it was very true to The Little Prince. I had no idea that this additional storyline existed until
you started seeing the movie posters of the girl with the goggles and the old dude.
Yes, until very late in the game.
Remember these guys?
There were later trailers that kind of exposed that, and then obviously movie posters and whatnot. Now, so that's one thing when I was first watching this that I was having trouble with, because the styles of the two are so different. I remember when the trailer first came out, the world was just wowed by the animation and the style of the Little Prince storyline, which is this stop motion. To me, it's almost like the 3D paper art that people do. It's just the way that the characters are molded. It's like they have paper faces, and sometimes it's more 3D. Other times it's very flat and painted on top. Just very rich. And I absolutely love that style, and thought it worked so well. And then you contrast that with the real life storyline of the little girl and her mom.
The CG, yeah.
And it just feels somewhat generic to me, just the characters. And I don't necessarily think that they didn't work together. I was kind of concerned. I'm like, okay, how is this going to work? I think it worked okay. I'm not necessarily sold on the fact that I feel this other storyline was necessary, because the movie was long, a little long, not a little long, but longer than most. It was over 90 minutes. So most animated films are around 90 minutes. And I felt that since this is such a short work, I don't know. I'm just kind of, I would have liked, I don't know. I'll let someone else talk while I ponder what I'm trying to.
Yeah, ponderize. So I think it goes without saying, though, that there were big expectations for the film because the storybook that the film derives from is so loved and so popular. And it also helped that director Mark Osborne had this really powerful pitch that he did. He had what was called his magic suitcase, and it was really cool, actually. I think Jeff Bridges actually mentioned it and how cool it was, that it was this kind of crazy suitcase that had all these pull-out compartments and all these pop-up things that he used to pitch the film, and it was very magical and very eccentric and stuff, and that actually won over a lot of actors and artists and got the distributors online. And so, you know, it was really an elaborate thing. And also Osborne was so impassioned with how he gave his pitch that he was actually able to get a lot of support. I mean, there's a lot of, A-list Hollywood actors and actresses that lent their voice to the film. And I don't know if this had anything to do with it, but they actually animated for the English voice track, and then they re-recorded it in French because the voices all line up. I thought I was going to be watching some French film where it was dubbed over, but it was very much made that way and stuff. And so, I don't know. A lot of passion for your project will go a long way, because it had a lot going for it. Like, it didn't really have it didn't have a distributor at the time. It was a foreign film, so it has that kind of stigma, like that Simpsons episode. You know, maybe that's what people think about it. But so anyway, Magic Suitcase might be a good tip for pitching your projects.
Ooh.
But definitely excitement and passion. really magic helps.
Suitcase. Yeah.
I mean, seriously, we had to pitch conceptual stories to these DreamWorks people at the beginning of the summer. And we got this crazy idea about trash in the ocean and that it forms this giant whale sculpture. And it's all very symbolic and like not negative or positive. It's very complex. And we had to basically practice how we said it, because what you have in your head needs to be able to be articulated clearly and with excitement, because excitement and passion is contagious, and that can get your director hooked, or your producers hooked, and or your executives or the people that matter. And so I definitely learned an important lesson with pitching then, because, man, that was kind of a convoluted story, I'm not gonna lie, but we got it to work in the end. Our producer guy from Dreams was like, wow, when he saw the final product. So that's all I wanted from him. But yeah, passion in your pitch, passion.
So what did you feel about the little girl's story? Do you feel that it worked, that it didn't work? I mean, it's there to frame and kind of juxtapose the little prince's story. I feel like the little prince's story is so whimsical and just like a fairy. It really is a fairy tale in all the different elements in what's happening and whatnot. And then we skip to reality right away. And it's just like boring. Not that it is boring, but it's your boring, you know, modern day world
setup that we've seen.
Yeah. Where we're trying to get into the school, and it's like everyday nowadays problems. Like the world is so competitive and parents are so over.
Yeah.
Involved in their kids' lives and scheduling things out and not letting them be kids. And that didn't necessarily feel new or unique to me. However, the fable elements of The Little Prince, even though I'd read the book before, felt very exciting. I was just wondering, I mean, I need to do more. I just don't know why he necessarily felt he had to have this element of the girl and her mom and that conflict.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
So
I feel like they were trying to make it more allegorical. I feel like there was a lot of points where you could make the fables and just the story, the lessons trying to be learned through the Little Prince. Like, you can see that happening in real life. And I think they were maybe trying to do that on a lot of cases. There are a lot of themes in here that they pulled out that I didn't necessarily gravitate to when I first read the book, and so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. So first of all, I think everyone liked the stop motion stuff better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would almost call it like paper motion or something like that, because they were straight up made out of paper.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first couple scenes you could see, like, and then it shifted into a wooden feel, which I love that.
Oh yeah, that kind of like toymation feel.
Uh-huh.
I like it when the little prince first meets the aviator, and he has different facial expressions, and you can see the craftsmanship in it when they switch to a different face and stuff. And so the stop motion stuff was brilliant. I personally got confused when they turned all the stop motion characters into CG characters at the end, like the little girl like visits kind of this like twisted, corrupt version of the little prince's world, Mr. Prince. And but here's what I have to say about the little girl and the mom. They don't even have names. They're just the girl and the mother.
Sweetie.
Yeah. Basically, what the strong point... Okay, the strong point of having that is to have, like you said, Chelsea, like a very direct interpretation of what they want you to get out of the story of the little prince, and have it apply to a character that maybe the audience can relate to. Because the little prince, and I haven't even read the dang thing, but that's how prepared I am for the show. But from what I saw in the film, and from what I understood, what I saw, the little prince has multiple interpretations. Am I right?
Yes.
And The Little Prince is very ephemeral and intentionally unclear and a little bit of vague, but not necessarily in a negative way. It's basically that's what makes it so accessible to youngsters and adults like Chelsea. Like, she can watch it at the gym because it's got multiple interpretations and it's got multiple things that you can extract from it. And so subtlety and symbolism and metaphor is there. Whereas the little girl and her mother is not subtle and not a metaphor at all. It's basically like, this is what happens when you grow up and get a degree in finance, you know? This is what happens when you go to business school and try to get a job. You turn into a horrible person. Businessmen are evil. The end. Any questions?
The end.
But basically, it's not subtle. And so when you pair an unsubtle, ephemeral story with a story that's not subtle at all, that's very, I wouldn't say in your face because it wasn't Zootopia exactly, but it was more very direct. Like, the mother was very much like a parody of the controlling but scared control freak. You know, she's not a tyrant because the little girl's totally into it. You know, she's just as on board with her and has the same desires as the mom, to be successful and be a grown up and stuff. And so the many like themes and the many ideas that can be extracted from The Little Prince are kind of funneled into the story of the girl. That's just my theory on it.
I loved
the symbolism and the kind of ethereal, kind of not abstract but surrealness of the Little Prince segments. And whereas the CG part was just like, oh, she's like found a friend that her mom, that society doesn't want her to be friends with, and they have a lot of adventures. Ooh, I bet she's gonna get her feelings betrayed at some point. And it just kind of plays out like that.
I did like how they had the difference in the two sets of animation style. It's kind of like back in the olden days when there was no CG and it was just like live action versus animated, and they would do that to like do dream sequence services or
Then you got James and the Giant Peach,
right? Yeah, well, but this one I felt like having the two separate like that helped it keep the two stories separate, and so that you're not like, wait, where are we still? Are we still in this world or this world? So I felt like that was really great. It kept that idea tight. I didn't, and I kind of feel like at the end they did want to kind of bring it all back home, bring, you know, how things would be if they were still going. I'm not sure how I liked that one, but I felt like it ended really well. There were just like those 15 minutes where I was like, why? But I felt like there was a payoff. So
there was a payoff at the end. Yeah. You get to see the little prince in CG and not just papermation.
What we all were looking for.
That's all I ever wanted. I will say this though, hearing Jeff Bridges in the intro was majestic. I love Jeff Bridges' voice ever since Tron, you know, and I kind of like rediscovered Jeff Bridges. I mean, Jeff Bridges could be rattling off the side effects of like a prescription medicine in his voice, and I'd be like, keep talking, man. Thick as molasses. I love it.
I kept getting like The Giver in my head. I mean, I've seen other movies with him, but I think that was the last movie that I saw with him. And I kind of felt like it had a little bit of the same vibe as far as like the guy you're not really not supposed to be talking to, or I don't know, sharing all the secrets of life.
Jeff Bridges, he specializes as the guy you're not really supposed to be talking to. I get you. And then we've got there's so many celebrity voices. We got Rachel McAdams as the mother, and then you French people help me out with, but Marion Cotillard.
And just keep going.
And then James Franco, and then Benicio del Toro, and then Ricky Gervais, Paul Giamatti. I forget who Paul Giamatti was supposed to be. And then Albert Brooks. I love all the sinister Albert Brooks roles that he's been doing lately, or that we've been seeing lately. You know, this came out last year, and Secret Life of Pets came out later. But you know, I'm waiting for the evil Marlin Pixar theory. He wanted Dory to get lost. For the insurance money.
For the life insurance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, what I didn't like is that these big names and these cool voices, like Benicio del Toro as the snake, like, after seeing Sicario, like, he fits the snake character. But a lot of them are just in it for, like, 2 seconds. I'm thankful that James Franco was only the fox for, like, 1 minute. Because I'm like, oh. Can we not? I'm not a James Franco fan.
I wasn't a fan. Well, I could have gone with any actor really for this over him. Like,
especially when they only have like 2 lines.
Yeah, I wasn't like I hate James Franco, but it was just like it was kind of a. I didn't feel like he. I don't know. I didn't feel like it was like the best fit in my opinion. But I do. The fox is one of my favorite characters. My favorite quote in the entire book is when the little prince is looking and saying, "Hey, come play with me." And the fox says, "I can't, I'm not tamed." And he comes back and he said, "What? I don't understand. What is tamed?" And he says, "To be tamed is to develop ties. And to you," I'll quote right now, "to you, I am nothing more than a fox, like 100,000 other foxes. But if you tame me, then we shall need each other. To me, you shall be unique in all the world. To you, I shall be unique in all the world." I love that quote. It's one of my favorites just because it's like, how much does time really goes into building a relationship? And it was just like, wow, so beautiful. Mm.
Eternal truths. I didn't understand what the fox was supposed to represent, or was he just kind of teaching him a lesson about human relationships?
I don't know. There's always a fox. I just think of The Simpsons, too.
There's always a fox.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of characters that pop up just for mere moments just to kind of teach a lesson or the moral of the story. And the fox comes in to talk about being tamed, but also to kind of tie back to the flower or the rose and how she's unique to him. So I think really it was just a plot device to introduce this theme or moral and message, and then we don't really see him again as many other characters in the book.
I love the plushie though.
Want one?
Oh, plushie. Isn't he just adorable?
I want that plushie,
dude. I'm gonna
so cute.
Like, if you went on Etsy and made a bunch of homemade fox plushies, you'd make a fortune. Come on,
seriously.
Come on,
please. Somebody do it and send me one.
Yeah, yeah. The snake, I guess, is just supposed to be death. I guess.
Really.
He's got it in for that little prince, man.
Oh yeah, but I liked his.
He compared himself to being more powerful than the hand of a king or the finger of a king. Very interesting, and so it's just got a lot of messages in the little prince material. It's just kind of like, huh, some thinkers.
And that was one of the themes that I didn't really think were as played as highly or as
prominently,
that's a good word, as prominently in the book, and that was death and loss. It was because when you grow up, those are the main things that you end up realizing, mm-hmm. that there is death and there is loss, and so there was a lot of that in it. It made me want to go back and read the book and remember exactly if that was so prominently displayed.
Yeah, in the book, there's a lot more themes of, like you were mentioning, growing up and this journey to adulthood. And so there's a lot of concepts that, even though this is typically referred to as a children's book, it could be considered, you know, a more adult book in the fact that it has some little heavier philosophical themes that it does address. We don't necessarily get into those as much in the movie, and that's okay. But,
such as, and so forth. Yeah. Okay. So notable scenes. I think we can all appreciate that a flying propeller almost killed a child in this film.
Oh my gosh. That came out of nowhere.
Hey, at least they call the cops. When does that ever happen in films like this? Thank you for being realistic. The Little Prince, like something like that happens. Call the cops.
And your insurance company.
Yeah.
I think my favorite parts of the film were all the desert scenes. Mm-hmm. You know, how when he first meets the little prince, he get this kind of wide shot and he's like, boom, center frame, you know, very fantastic Mr. Fox, but not for quirkiness, more for like epicness. So it's got this kind of, I don't know, Lawrence of Arabia feel. And then you got your depth of field and it's just a very well composed shot. It's very, very cool. I think I liked all that stuff the most because it's very, very surreal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those were definitely like aesthetically the most pleasing.
Those are the, for sure. You know, the reason I love the stop motion scenes so much is because it really felt timeless in a way. Just the story itself was very timeless. And then just the look and the feel and the settings were all very interesting and captivated me. While the real life settings, you know, suburbia, you know, mom, school, blah, blah, blah. So
dystopian corporate underworld.
Yes, yes, we've all been. What's so great about that? But yeah, the more time we could spend in the Little Prince's world, the better. And I got excited every time we were there.
Yeah, I felt like they did a really good job with the show, Don't Tell. So like, for example, when they talked about the dad, like how the little girl's dad is just missing. And like, they don't even really address it, but she's just like, you're just becoming just like him. You know, and what, you're just going to be gone too. And yeah, it was just like, you really feel for the mom in a lot of these moments. Cause you just realize, wow, like she's really just trying. Mm-hmm. And, they did a really good job of that. Of just like, at first when you see all these globes, you don't really know what they're there for. And then when she just puts another one up there, like, yay, dad yeah. gives the same thing every year. I liked that. I thought it was like, man, that's really good. And then right there when the aviator was talking about having to go, when he would eventually go back and be with the prince, leave, and he's obviously referring to death, and she's just thinking that we're rarely going to get in the plane and go see the little prince, like, oh, this world actually exists. And and then he's just like, well, let's go and comfort you with this little car ride. I thought that those scenes were really great. I love the car ride.
I was like,
too.
Man, are you sure you want to take this girl that you don't really know or have ties to, you know? It's all right. It's a different country. It's Europe.
Yeah.
But I'm just kidding. Obviously, it was wrong, and that was the point of it. But anyway, I just liked so much of it. You know, I liked a lot of it. And there are parts that really drug out for me.
So let's go
it
to
have its own timing.
Let's go to Mason's first point, which he skipped over in our notes. Mason,
oh no, I didn't want to be such a negative Nancy.
I didn't feel the way
guys
that you felt, but
I thought it was boring. Sorry, I thought the film was boring. Like, please don't leave. I still liked a lot of the parts of the film, but was I the only person who thought this film like drug on a little bit?
Rachel Wagner in the comments, she's mentioning she felt it was a little boring too. She's like, I hate to bring up the B word. I was like, whoa, girl.
There's
whoa.
hold on. Get ready to ban her from the chat. Well, okay, I'm glad to be backed up by such a reputable source as Rachel. And I'm proud to join her as someone who thought it was the B word. I felt like the film could have been condensed to shave off that last half hour where they go to like the dystopian corporate wasteland and they try to redeem Mr. Prince. The whole part with like the city planet where they find the grown-ups and it's like very blatantly anti-child. You know, I'm like, what is this? Chitty Chitty Bang Bang? and the whole thing with Mr. Prince just seemed kind of unnecessary. I felt like it was important that the girl understood the lesson, not become a warrior for the lesson to help out the little prince. Was that even in the little prince storybook?
No.
Did he go off and become a Yanitor?
No.
Becoming a Yanni, the Yanitor. Dexter's Laboratory, anyone?
No.
Yeah. And then the whole thing with the overbearing brainwash guy and then Albert Brooks coming out as evil businessman. And I want to be like, okay, it's because of those businessmen that you can even make this film. But that's just the capitalist in me. You know, you're never going to find a European produced film that's actually in favor of businessmen. But that's all right. Here's to hoping. you know, the whole thing seemed kind of unnecessary. I would have loved to have had a beautifully handcrafted stop-motion animated version of the original book and to just let us extract what we want from it. And then it would be an even more accessible version of the storybook, just in a different form, and just have this kind of visual spectacle.
I felt like the same way. And I felt like there was a lot of points where, I mean, I think they still could have kept the story of the little girl. I didn't feel like it took away from in a lot of ways. In some ways it did. Like, I agree with the whole going to the other world, like the city world. And it was just like, I didn't feel like that was necessary. I think they could have accomplished what their goals were, without going there. And I kind of wished in a way that it was like, I wanted this to be a think deeply film in the same way that you did. And I would have really loved if like somebody like Pete Docter or like Hayao Miyazaki would have like done something like this. That would have been grand.
I read a few reviews and a few people made parallels to Up specifically.
I saw a lot of... I like the subtlety of Inside Out and how they were able to explain those feelings, because I felt like they did try to go into a lot of the feelings that the little girl was having as far as like loss. And I just felt like there was a lot of subtlety that could have been brought out of that. And I think they were trying to, and I just feel like they didn't know how to accomplish that.
Well, I didn't think the movie was particularly boring. I actually was a little bit more... boring. Well, when I first started watching it and I saw the CGI scenes, I was like, oh, well, this isn't... These aren't the scenes that I really am looking forward to based on the trailers. However, I actually did find the storyline of the little girl somewhat interesting. Like I was saying before, I mean, that may sound a little bit contradictory. I didn't necessarily think it was 100% needed. However, it was interesting enough that it kept my attention. And I did like certain elements of the story. But definitely the stop motion took the cake or took the prize, right?
Yeah.
Oh, cake, man. I'm hungry. What'd you think of the music? I'm surprised Chelsea has nothing to say about the music.
I thought it was good.
I love
it. It's all about that Hans Zimmer.
I mean, he did a great job.
I got kind of a Coraline vibe from, you know, there were a couple songs that actually had kind of a quirky vibe to it. You know,
it was very French feeling to, for me. Which I loved. Yeah. I felt the score and the songs were very appropriate, and that they really did help to enhance this movie. I saw some of my friends even tweeting about this, saying, oh, that Hans Zimmer score on The Little Prince, it's amazing. People who I don't think would normally, I feel like, be watching an animated film. So I thought it was interested. It got me excited that The Little Prince has an audience, and not only are they enjoying it, but they're also enjoying the music. I really did like the unique songs that, again, were somewhat timeless for me. I feel like sometimes you throw a pop song in there and it's like, okay,
oh,
great.
Thank you for no pop songs. And, well, I don't know this Camille lady.
I mean, maybe,
you know,
and Camille is
it wasn't pop.
You know, she's not pop, but French, I feel, is somewhat timeless, like French songs.
Just because we don't?
Yes, just because I'm not. So I'm like, oh, so timeless, yes, yes. But I liked it, so those are my 2 cents.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I felt like that was all good things. All good. I think it helped the timing of it, too. I mean, that's one of the reasons why it was able to take its own time, is because it did have a good score to kind of back it up. And it for me, that's why I didn't notice it being so long. I felt like it was good for contemplation and thought. So
Mondays are for coffee and contemplation. Anyway, Stranger Things, man. Speaking of Netflix... But yeah, I love the music. I thought the music was good. I also liked that the movie was not so happy and wacky. It was very heartwarming, but a mandatory animated dance party would have been out of place. And so I'm glad they refrained from it.
Can you imagine? You know, could you really imagine, like, Little Prince and the rose and the and then the girl
the old
and
man
the old
getting
man.
Down. Oh, no, the old man's not coming back, man. I think they were pretty serious with how they kind of tied him up. At the end, you know, or tied his arc up. It's like, maybe he's not going to get out of that hospital bed, you know, but at least she got to see him, you know, and share the story with him. She completed
it. I liked that.
Maturity,
that's how
y'all.
They tied the book into it. Like, oh, this is actually how the book got started. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Okay, so I was trying to get a balanced opinion on this. You know, I'm trying not to be the jaded critic, but I'm also not trying to be like all googly-eyed in love with these films. And I'm trying to be balanced. So I came across two critic reviews, and one of them was very positive, one of them was slightly negative. So I don't know. One of them was from The Independent, and it said that it had a lot of good things to say. And they both use the same quote. It is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. So they compare that as like sitting alongside this kind of gentle philosophical reminder that love is enduring. Growing up doesn't mean shredding your dreams and all this stuff. I feel like Judy Hopps' parents in Zootopia would have done very well in the universe of the little girl and the mom.
Yes.
Besides the fact that they're rabbits and not humans. But anyway, and then Vox came out with one that said, oh, it actually criticized it. So it actually paralleled the film's message with this kind of millennial trend of avoiding adulthood. So they saw it as not just grow up, but don't forget. They saw it as an attack on growing up, you know, in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I can kind of see that because the film was sort of antagonistic of, quote unquote, the grown-ups, you know, the people that are the academics, the people that are the businessmen, the people who, you know, exploit natural resources. I'm like, I don't know. I didn't have a problem with him stealing the stars because it was powering a city, but apparently that was the wrong thing to do. Anyway, that, I don't know. I thought that they were maybe reaching too far. I don't know. Do y'all think it was an attack on adulthood?
No, I felt like there were the main, you mentioned earlier, Mason, that it was kind of like the dystopian corporate world versus kind of like a fantasy world. And I felt like it, for me, it was more of like structure and over planning to compensate for the past and pain, versus acceptance and hope. I felt like those were two really main, vibes that came with it. I mean, I see a lot of good in what the mom was trying to do and what the mom does. And even just the power of planning your day and the power.
I kind of respect her.
I totally respect it. And I saw like, that's exactly what I do for a lot of my days. Cause otherwise I don't get anything done. And then I feel like, well, what do I have to show for my life type thing. And so when I have those structured and planning days, I'm happier. So it's not like, that structure and planning is bad, but more of it is if you're the reason why are you using it to compensate for your past and for your pain, and which in her case, I felt like she was trying to use it to push her little girl's life forward in spite of the fact that she's a single mom with not as much, you know, who has obviously been through some pain.
Yeah. They also, you know, showed that point by how extreme her planning was, where it was nearly every
minute
15
of every day.
Minutes it was scheduled out, which
you, what if you have to go to the potty?
Not allowed. Absolutely not allowed. Okay.
I kind of do that though.
But
like, I don't follow through 100%, but it's like I would in a perfect world.
I mean, for an adult, that's fine. But I do think there are elements where children need to be children and just play and enjoy life and be creative. And I think that's kind of what it was trying to portray, that yes, this, you know, obviously we see structure as good because we've learned to accept it. But forcing that much structure on a child is really stifling. And she didn't really put up a fight for the most part. Like, she was totally happy.
Oh, she was all for it.
She was alone all day long, and she was all for it, and she was getting her goals, and she was doing her homework. And then it's when she realized that she found a friend and how much joy she had in that and that experience. And you know, through this story that was being told, which is very, you know, much of a child sort of thing where you read, you know, fairy tales and whatnot. I think she kind of realized what was missing in her life, and that's why she kind of started revolting and doing a lot more of that and lying, which I think was like the kind of her breaking point, where she was such a perfect girl up until that moment, and then she lied about her birthday.
Her mom was such a jerk when she was like, let's see, yep, you can hang out with your friend next summer.
Yeah.
Between 1 and 1:30.
I look forward to meeting them. Yeah, between 1 and 1:30. So yeah, the mom definitely had flaws and stuff, but I don't know.
Well,
I mean I know that I'm going to be the parent that's going to send my kid to like math camp and stuff.
Oh,
you
got to
be, man. Yeah, because STEM is taking over the world. But no, not really. As a grown up who I don't think has really grown up. Just ask my wife and my little sisters who act older than me. I totally understand the theme of growing up but not forgetting. And I think what satisfied me with the ending was when the aviator hugged the girl and said, "You are going to make a great grown up."
Mm-hmm.
By implying that she will grow up someday, but that she'll do it according to the little prince. You know, she'll not forget what is the most important thing, you know?
Keep the main thing the main thing.
All right, so we can jump to rating it, or I have a few reviews which we can listen to before we rate it ourselves.
Let's rate and then go to the other people's reviews.
Yeah, our opinions are more important than theirs.
Then Mason, why not you take it away, mister?
Yeah.
All right, three stars. 3 stars, folks. It was pretty good. I would definitely show it to my kids. Like, it's very kid friendly. Like, it's very cool. And the animation, we didn't even talk about the quality of the CG animation. Like, it's not that bad.
Very good.
I think it's good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Hey. But I wouldn't see it again. We were talking about this at the RotoCast for our patrons. And, okay, maybe not math camp, maybe animation camp if they have one. But I'm responding to people on chat. But we didn't even talk about the animation. You know, I just thought it was good. And we had a conversation about replay value at the RotoCast for our patrons. I wouldn't see it again. Some films I think are good, but I wouldn't see them again. This is one of them. Sorry.
Okay. I will also give the movie 3 stars, but I do say that there is replay value. And I think the main reason why there is replay value is because I have read the book and I like going back to my thoughts of the book. And I like going back to thinking and seeing the portrayal of that, and just the pictures are really pretty. So I do believe that there is replay value for me, and I actually do want to see it again. Just because it was like, I'd like to relive some of those earlier parts of the movie, not necessarily okay. The end, but you know, some of the earlier parts when they are so deep into the stop motion part. Mm-hmm. I would go back for that.
I will also give it 3 out of 5 stars. I thought it was somewhat enjoyable. It was definitely enjoyable. It wasn't boring, as the B word has been mentioned. But I could have seen these almost as 2 separate movies. I could have seen just the girl storyline and expanding that a little more, and then the little prince storyline expanding that a little more to be a feature length film. Interesting.
And that's
it. They combined them together. I think, again, they would have been better separately rather than together. But
The Little Prince could have been replaced with almost anything, and the little girl's storyline still would have made sense.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I loved the music and especially loved the animation. Like Mason said, the CG animation was very great. I didn't ever feel that I was watching something very cheap or homegrown or whatnot, or direct to video, which obviously it was not. It has $77 million budget, so we can definitely expect very good things. And the stop motion is just so jaw-droppingly beautiful. I need more of it in my life.
I really do.
I mean, the parts where you can see it's called subsurface scattering, where you can see the sun through the paper, mm-hmm. you know, on the scarf and the hair and stuff. Man, it's just mwah, mwah, mwah.
I'll agree with that.
Morgan always makes a really uncomfortable face when I do that.
All right, so now let's go into some voicemails. We had 4 voicemails, 3 particularly
what?
About this film.
Cha-ching.
People are very Hashtag excited, blessed. Not only for this to come out so we can finally see it here in the United States, but also to talk about it. So I think it is only fair that our very first voicemail is from Jeremiah, who has lots of good things to say.
Hello, Rotoscopers. This is Jeremiah calling about The Little Prince, because it's finally here, people. The Little Prince is actually released, and it's not being pushed back anymore. You've seen that beautiful trailer a million times, and it's finally here. Speaking of beauty, isn't this a beautiful movie? It transitions from CG to stop motion, back and forth, flawlessly. I felt no bump whatsoever. This is very ambitious. Huge chocolate-covered kudos to everyone involved. Applause. Amazing.
Chocolate-covered kudos. I'm going to start using that now.
As an adaption, it's remarkable. It's very true to it. It's in that, you know, there's even illustrations from the book. Like, that's amazing. Made me so delighted because it's one of the greatest pieces of children's literature ever written. But it also adds to it wonderfully, keeps all of the ideas. It adds some of its own. So many ideas in this movie. Could not hope to talk about them all. Well, but, you know, there's the stars being kept away, which is relevant, of course, what with us actually unable to see the stars in so many parts of the world. There's not growing up too fast. There's that, you know, we want to make everything utilitarian. Well, so many things utilitarian that we can't have art if everything's utilitarian. Just so many ideas. And isn't this a cool time to be an animation addict, people? I think it is. Anyways, 4 out of 5 stars. I know, sounds a little low after all my gushing, but I don't think it was, you know, quite up there with 5, but it was extraordinary just as a very unique piece of filmmaking. All right, that is all. Bye-bye.
Woohoo! Thank you so much, Jeremiah. So 4 out of 5 stars, huh? Well, all right.
I love Jeremiah's voicemail. He was so animated and excited and amazing.
Chocolate-covered
I love it. Chocolate-covered kudos,
any more
kudos,
Jeremiah
man.
Voicemails. That was very fun. All right, our next one is from Brandon, who is one of our writers. So let's check out Brandon's voicemail.
Hello, Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea. You guys might not know this, but I am one of your writers. And also, this is my first voicemail. Two things. Very soon, I'll be hitting 500 articles. So, yeah, wow. How many years has it been since I first started writing in 2013? About maybe 2. And now I've written nearly 500 articles already. That's crazy. So, yeah, there's that going on.
Congrats on
crazy,
that.
This
man.
Month, it's going to be a pretty interesting month as far as animated films go. Both movies, Kubo and the Two Strings and Sasha's Party, are both movies that fall outside of the traditional expectations of a mainstream animated movie. So it'll be interesting to see how they do at the box office, as well as with critics and audiences. I guess that's it for my first voicemail. Love the podcast, by the way.
Thanks, Brandon. Yeah, so Brandon almost hitting 500.
Almost 500 articles. That's just unreal.
Amazing.
That is insane.
We should bind them in a book and be like the Brandon compilation.
The Brandon Chronicles. Yes.
The Brandon Chronicles.
No, he is an amazing writer.
They'll be worth a lot of money someday.
All right. Our last review is from Ryan, one of our patrons. So let's check out what Ryan has to say.
Ryan!
Hello, Otoscopers. Ryan Pareto here with my review for The Little Prince, which I'm very excited found a home on Netflix. You know, when I initially found out about this film, I was extremely excited. And then when I started seeing the animation style and stop-motion portions, I got even more hyped. And I tried to contain it all, but eventually I got to see it, and I was very, very pleased. I got everything I wanted out of it, and then some. I loved how they expanded certain aspects, how they simplified certain aspects, how they added to it in certain ways. And, you know, the story just means so much to me. I purchased so many versions. I gifted so many versions. I have 3 or 4 of the audio versions because I have different voice actors and stuff. Yes. Because I make good decisions with my money. And I was just so happy to finally see this film. And very grateful it's finding a new audience in the Netflix community. I hope you and a lot more people find it and like it. And I'm going to be giving it a very, very unobjective 5 out of 5. I cannot fairly judge this.
Oh, my God.
But I enjoyed it. I hope you guys have a great day. And thank you so much for everything you do. Bye.
Ryan
five
Pareto.
Out of five, y'all.
You're like, the man. That was pretty intense. Yeah. No,
I got nothing to say about that, man.
But it was everything that he said was true. As far as there were parts where they expanded it, where they, you know, needed to, and then there were parts where they simplified it, where they needed to. So I give good props for some of those.
Good props or mad props?
Not quite mad props, but
okay, because it's not 2002. Okay.
Right.
Well, all right. Okay, good props to Ryan.
All right, now our last one's from Sarah. She has a somewhat unrelated question, which we will answer.
A question.
Hey, Rotoscopers, it's me, Sarah, again. I'm making this as a recording, and I'm here to leave a voicemail for your Little Prince episode. I haven't gotten to see this yet, but I have a question that's been burning in the back of my mind for the past week. So I watched an episode of the absolutely heinous Little Shop of Horrors TV show, and I thought this could lead to an interesting question. If you guys could pick a musical, kid-friendly or not, to be made into like an animated movie or TV show, which one would you choose? Other than Wicked, because I can hear Morgan and Chelsea about to say Wicked. So, yeah, just thought I'd call and say hi. Love you guys. Bye.
Love you too,
so
Sarah.
So if we could take any musical, does it have to be Broadway? Because I don't really do that. If we could take any musical and turn it into an animated film or an animated series, I suppose. Huh, I gotta think about that one. My experience with musicals is not
we
as extensive.
We are disqualified from choosing Wicked.
I'm disqualified.
And, you know, obviously we're disqualified from choosing films that were already musicals, or like the Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin,
right.
And, you know, things that came from a movie and then turn into a musical, and we're going to turn it back into a movie.
We're just going to go back.
Let's Beauty and the Beast. You know what? That is my pick. I think it'd be so good.
For me, I'm actually going to go with Jekyll and Hyde. It was back in like 2000 or so. But they've got some amazing songs in there. Some of my absolute favorite songs to sing myself. So that one would be the one that I would go for since Wicked has been disqualified. Yeah. But Jekyll and Hyde, like, that's, if you haven't listened to the soundtrack on it, there's the best songs to listen to are From This This Is the Moment. And then also In His Eyes and A New Life. Those are my three favorite songs on that. And Someone Like You, so top four. So those are my favorite songs on that album, so you should listen to them. But yeah, that would be a great, I think it would be really good and really easily done in animation considering the transformation and such.
Ooh.
My favorite musical, one of them is Les Mis, and I don't really think that necessarily would be great in animation, although you could do a really
cool...
They
make an anthro.
Like an artsy stop motion version, but I think some of these more modern ones, maybe like How to Succeed at Business Without Really Trying, could be super cool in animation. You could even do it as an anthropomorphic thing, you know, where they're...
Everything's more fun when they're
cats
all
that are
cats
humans,
and
yeah, exactly. So anyway,
yeah. I don't know. I'm really limited with the musicals I've seen. I don't know, Guys and Dolls, but with anthropomorphic animals. I really like Phantom of the Opera. I think like once you see Phantom of the Opera, you don't need to see that many musicals. But I don't know. That would be kind of cool. He could do it with like cute animals and stuff, and change it to something like Phantom of the Toll Booth or something.
There you go.
The Phantom Toll Booth. Sorry. But anyway, that's all I got.
Awesome.
Good question, Sarah. Thanks for your
all right,
voicemails.
That is all we have for voicemails. If you have a voicemail, be sure to send them to us at rotoscopers.com/voicemails or 406-646-6575. And before I close, I do have two items of business that I want to discuss, which I should have talked about at the top of the show. One, Morgan's PSA on us being critics.
A PSA?
There was some feedback last episode how it was very disappointing that we switched at the last minute from not doing Ice Age to Bambi. And that was absolutely on us. We didn't give you guys heads notice that we were changing the movie. I'm sure some people went and saw Ice Age, kind of preparing for the film. And then we ultimately decided not to do it. And we got some feedback that, you know, you guys are critics. You should review, you know, the good and the bad, and you should just suck it up and do it. And I wanted to address that. I do not think
that
we are...
Did someone call us out on that?
Yes, a little bit. But I do not think that we are critics. I have never referred to myself as a critic. I'm an animation addict. And like I said at the other podcast, I'm addicted to the good stuff. And I... you know, have a good time with the bad stuff. But yeah, long story short, that one was bad on us that we didn't give you enough heads up that we weren't going to do it. And we will be better in the future about if we switch things, not to literally do it the day before and say, nah, just kidding, we don't want to do that anymore. Because that wasn't really fair to you guys. So yes, that is my piece on that. And I'm very sorry if people were disappointed. It seems that 99% of the people were okay that we did Bambi instead. So... We did get a lot of positives about the fact that we did Bambi and people were really excited.
Yeah, we're always looking out for the one, but, you know, I don't know. Yeah, we did decide pretty much the day of or like the night before, we don't really want to do Ice Age. Let's do a Disney classic instead. Morgan was like, ooh, someone just happened to request a Disney classic. So it kind of worked out, but I don't know. It's just that sometimes we get so busy and we don't get to plan whether we really want to do Ice Age or not. And it wasn't a patron choice, so kind of a lesser of two evils thing.
Plus, yeah.
But wasn't the Bambi review hilarious, though? Wasn't it just so great?
Cue the gunshot. Perfect. So my other little announcement is the status on writing applications, or if you applied for graphic designer or film editor. Film editor. We're making a movie, guys. Video editor. We had over 60 applications for all of those, and they are in my inbox right now. I have star next to anyone who applied, so I know exactly where you are. The fact that we got so many was kind of overwhelming, to be honest, and so I haven't actually gone through them yet. I want to make sure that I go through them all at once and give everyone a fair shot. So our goal is to have that kind of those announcements done by the end of August. So if you are wondering what is the status of the applications to join the team, then that is that. So hopefully by August, but yeah, there were just quite lot of people, which is really exciting and overwhelming. And, you know, I want to make sure
there's 60 people that care. That's awesome.
60 people that care. And then it makes me kind of sad because I'm like, oh, everyone applied and we want to just take everyone on. So you should be getting. So if you're emailing me asking, hey, what's the status? That is the status. So hopefully in the next few weeks we'll have an update or a final decision. Okay. So other than that, that is all that I have, everybody.
Good episode. I like it.
Very good episode. I'm really excited that we were able to review this one. Thank you, Netflix, for making that possible for us. And I know a few people in the comments said that it's not available in their country yet. That's a big bummer. And I really wish this had better, bigger distribution so all of us could see it and all be happy and holding hands and whatnot. But thanks for everyone who joined in the chat room. We had a very, very active chat, a marriage proposal even. So great stuff.
We had a pretty eventful chat going on here. It was a real party.
For show notes for this episode, you can go to rotoscopers.com/129. That's where you can find all of the various links to purchase if you would like to listen to the audiobook of this, if you would like to buy the book. There's anything that we refer to as far as articles and whatnot, we will include in the show notes. And of course, if you couldn't join us live and you want to give us your review, go to rotoscopers.com/129 and join the conversation in the comments. Also, you can support us like we talked about by becoming a patron. So we do a special episode every month where it's a little bit more chill. Not saying it's more fun, but it's chill and you guys get to ask us questions. Mason's drawing fun drawings. Every month it's a little different, so we're trying to make it fun for you guys. So rotoscopers.com/Patreon for that. Also, we do have our shirts still available. rotoscopers.com/store is where you can go and you can buy a Roto t-shirt. They're very cheap. They're really basically only $5 to $7, I believe, and then shipping, depending on if you're international. Really, we're not making any money on the shipping. It's just basically the base price of what it would cost to ship to various places. So check that out. And yeah, that's all I have.
Yay.
Woo.
Thank you so much for listening. We love our patrons and we love our listeners, and we're happy to discuss animation and to have such a lively conversation going on in the chat.
And we had first time voicemails. Woo-hoo! I love hearing people for the first time and being like,
your
nice.
Beautiful voices.
Yes. So make sure to check those out too. So if you want to be a part of the voicemails, if you're like, hey, why is it that, you know, I'm not on there? Well, it's because you need to send one.
Or, hey, I want to bug them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That too. All right,
cool,
everybody.
Cool.
Make sure to check us out on our individual streams. Not streams, but, you know, our individual locations. I actually just updated my website, so you can check that out. It's pretty cool.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going there right now.
I seem to do that all the time, but I did. Yes. And then also you can check out, I'm going to be going to Brazil next week. So good times will be following. And then we're going to be, I love your face, Mason.
I love the couch photo.
It's a great photo.
Regal, majestic, lovable. Yes, yes. Cuddly.
Oh, man. Fantastic. Check it out.
Even more of a reason to go to ChelseaRobson.com. What is this couch photo she's talking about?
So, I'm going to be posting a lot of stuff about my trip to Brazil, and I'm going to be gone there for 6 weeks. So about 2 episodes of the podcast, I will be in Brazil. So good times will be had. Check us out. You can go to ChelseaRobson.com. You can go Chelsea Robson, Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat is Chelsea M. Robson. So there's a little difference there, but, Morgan Stradling, she's consistent all the way through. On Twitter, Instagram, and
only
Snapchat.
One of me,
only one of her, and Mason SMTX on Twitter, and then this anime
Instagram.
Life.
I am off of Twitter.
Oh, okay.
I cut myself off.
He is no longer a member of the Twitterverse.
All right, so go straight to Instagram for that. We love hearing from you guys. We love catching up and being able to see you guys on all of these fronts. So make sure to check in and say hey. It'll be fun. So until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers.
Yay! Who are not in sync.
I just go for it now.
Try to go into a lot of the feelings that the little girl was having as far as like loss and kind of dealing with what?
Mason.
I'm not laughing
at you. You're giggling.
Sorry, some dude just like proposed to Morgan on the chat. I've never seen him before. So, I'm sorry. I just like that this guy is. Sorry, I'm not laughing at you, Chelsea. Go on. I'll mute my microphone.
Yeah. So I just felt like there was a lot of subtlety that could have been brought out of that, and I think they were trying to, and I just feel like they didn't know how to accomplish that. And you are really just, you should have turned off your camera too.
He is muting himself. He is having to get a drink of water.
What happened?
No I recovery.
I can't pull up the chat when I've my internet's so low, so I don't know what's going on right now.
Sorry, just pretend that never happened. Let's go. I'm not laughing because I think it's ridiculous that someone would propose to Morgan. I laughed because it was just so random and I've never seen them on the chat before.
Rodrigo came and he left. And
you know what it is? It's basically the equivalent of someone giving a seminar. Three people giving a seminar on the stage and some guy just busting through the doors of the auditorium going, I love you, Morgan! Please marry me!
And then leaving. Cool.
See, this is the funnest part of the show.
Yes. So this is what the patron cast is like.
This is what it's like for like an hour.